its way up my arms. I stand up straight again.
You think I want to live here? With you?
I laugh in a way I'm hoping will hurt her. I see the quick pain in her eyes. She presses her lips together at the sting. Still, I have no desire to take back my words, because finally, I have said something she's listening to. I stand there, refusing to leave. I want to hear what she'll say to this. I want to hear her say she's sorry. I need to ask you something, Eugenia. She twists her handkerchief, grimaces. I read the other day about how some girls get unbalanced, start thinking these unnatural thoughts. I have no idea what she's talking about. I look up at the ceiling fan. Someone set it going too fast. Clackety, clackety, clackety. Do you find men attractive? Are you having unnatural thoughts about... She shuts her eyes tight. Girls or women? I stare at her, wishing the ceiling fan would fly from its post, crash down on us both. Because it said in this article, there's a cure, a special root tea. Mother, I say, shutting my eyes tight. I want to be with girls as much as you'd like to be with James, sir. I head for the door, but I glance behind me. I mean, unless, of course, you do. Mother straightens, gasps. I pound up the stairs. The next day, I stack the Miss Myrna letters in a neat pile. I have $35 in my purse, the monthly allowance Mother still gives me. I go downstairs wearing a thick Christian smile. Living at home, whenever I want to leave Longleaf, I have to ask Mother if I can borrow her car, which means she'll ask where I'm going, which means I have to lie to her on a daily basis, which is in itself enjoyable, but a little degrading at the same time. I'm going down to the church, see if they need any help getting ready for Sunday school. Oh, darling, that's just wonderful. Take your time with the car. I decided last night what I need is a professional to help me with the column. My first idea was to ask Pascagoula, but I hardly know her. Plus, I couldn't stand the thought of Mother nosing around, criticizing me all over again. Hilly's maid, Yule May, is so shy I doubt she'd want to help me. The only other maid I see often enough is Elizabeth's maid, Abilene. Abilene reminds me of Constantine, in a way. Plus, she's older, and seems to have plenty of experience. On my way to Elizabeth's, I go by the Ben Franklin store and buy a clipboard, a box of number 2 pencils, a blue cloth notebook. My first column is due tomorrow, on Mr. Golden's desk by 2:00.
Skeeter, come on in.
Elizabeth opens her own front door, and I fear Abilene might not be working today. She has on a blue bathrobe and jumbo-sized rollers, making her head look huge, her body even more waif-like than it is. Elizabeth generally has rollers in all day. Can never get her thin hair full enough.
Sorry I'm such a mess. May Mobley kept me up half the night, and now I don't even know where Abilene's gotten off to.
I step inside the tiny foyer. It's a low-ceilinged house with small rooms. Everything has a second-hand look. The faded blue floral curtains. The crooked cover on the couch. I hear Raleigh's new accounting business isn't doing well. Maybe up in New York or somewhere it's a good thing. But in Jackson, Mississippi, people just don't care to do business with a rude, condescending asshole. Hilly's car is out front, but she's nowhere to be seen. Elizabeth sits at the sewing machine she has on the dining room table.
"I'm almost done," she says. "Let me just hem this last seam."
Elizabeth stands, holds up a green church dress with a round white collar.
"Now, be honest,"
she whispers with eyes that are pleading for me to be anything but.
"Does it look homemade?"
The hem on one side hangs longer than the other. It's wrinkled, and a cuff is already fraying.
100% store-bought, straight from Maison Blanche's,
I say, because that is Elizabeth's dream store. It is 5 stories of expensive clothes on Canal Street in New Orleans, clothes that could never be found in Jackson. Elizabeth gives me a grateful smile.
"May Mobley sleeping?"
I ask.
"Finally."
Elizabeth fiddles with a clump of hair that slipped out of her roller, grimaces at its obstinacy. Sometimes her voice takes on a hard edge when she talks about her little girl. The door to the guest bathroom in the hall opens and Hilly comes out talking.
"So much better. Everybody has their own place to go now."
Elizabeth fiddles with the machine needle, seems worried by it.
"You tell Raleigh I said you are welcome,"
Hilly adds, and it hits me then what's being said. Abilene has her own bathroom in the garage now. Hilly smiles at me and I realize she's about to bring up the initiative.
"How's your mama?"
I ask, even though I know this is her least favorite subject. "She gets settled in the home all right?"
"I guess."
Hilly pulls her red sweater down over the pudgy roll in her waist. She has on red and green plaid pants that seem to magnify her bottom, making it rounder and more forceful than ever.
"Of course, she doesn't appreciate a thing I do. I had to fire that maid for her. Caught her trying to steal the damn silver right under my nose."
Hilly narrows her eyes a bit.
"Y'all haven't heard, by the way, if that Minnie Jackson is working somewhere, have you?"
We shake our heads no.
"I doubt she'll find work in this town again,"
Elizabeth says. Hilly nods, mulling this over. I take a deep breath, anxious to tell them my news.
"I just got a job at the Jackson Journal," I say.
There's quiet in the room. Suddenly, Elizabeth squeals. Hilly smiles at me with such pride I blush and shrug, like it's not that big of a deal.
"They'd be a fool not to hire you, Skeeter Phelan,"
Hilly says and raises her iced tea as a toast.
"So, have either of y'all actually read Miss Myrna?"
I ask.
"Well, no,"
Hilly says.
"But I bet the poor white trash girls in South Jackson read it like the King James."
Elizabeth nods.
"All those poor girls without help, I bet they do."
"Would you mind if I talk to Abilene?" I ask Elizabeth, "to help me answer some of those letters?" Elizabeth is very still a second.
"Abilene? My Abilene?"
"I sure don't know the answers to these questions."
"Well, I mean, as long as it doesn't interfere with her work."
I pause, surprised by this attitude. But I remind myself that Elizabeth is paying her, after all.
"And not today, with May Mobley about to get up, or else I'll have to look after her myself."
"Okay, maybe I'll come by tomorrow morning, then?" I count the hours on my hand. If I finish talking to Abilene by mid-morning, I'll have time to rush home to type it up, then get it back to town by 2. Elizabeth frowns down at her spool of green thread.
"And only for a few minutes. Tomorrow's silver polishing day."
"It won't be long, I promise," I say. Elizabeth is starting to sound just like my mother. The next morning at 10, Elizabeth opens her door, nods at me like a schoolteacher.
"All right, go on in. And not too long now. May Mobley be waking up any time."
I walk into the kitchen, my notebook and papers under my arm. Abilene smiles at me from the sink, her gold tooth shining. She's a little plump in the middle, but it's a friendly softness. And she's much shorter than me, because who isn't? Her skin is dark brown and shiny against her starchy white uniform. Her eyebrows are gray, even though her hair is black.
Hey, Miss Skeeter. Miss Leafolt still at the machine?
Yes. It's strange, even after all these months home, to hear Elizabeth being called Miss Leafolt, not Miss Elizabeth, or even her maiden name, Miss Fredericks. May I? I point to the refrigerator. But before I can help myself, Abilene's opened it for me.
What you want, Coca-Cola?
I nod and she pops the cap off with the opener mounted on the counter, pours it into a glass. Abilene, I take a deep breath. I was wondering if I could get your help on something. I tell her about the column then, grateful when she nods that she knows who Miss Myrna is. So maybe I could read you some of the letters and you could help me with the answers? After a while, maybe I'll catch on and... I stop. There's no way I'll ever be able to answer cleaning questions myself. Honestly, I have no intention of learning how to clean. It sounds unfair, doesn't it? Me taking your answers and acting like they're mine. Or Myrna's, I mean. I sigh. Abilene shakes her head.
I don't mind that. I just ain't so sure Miss Leafolt gonna prove.
She said it was all right.
During my regular hours working?
I nod, remembering the propriety in Elizabeth's voice.
All right, then.
Abilene shrugs. She looks up at the clock above the sink.
I'll probably have to stop when May Mobley gets up.
Should we sit? I point to the kitchen table. Abilene glances at the swinging door.
You go ahead. I'm fine standing.
I spent last night reading every Miss Myrna article from the previous 5 years, but I haven't had time to sort through the unanswered letters yet. I straighten my clipboard, pencil in hand.
Here's a letter from Rankin County. Dear Miss Myrna, I read, how do I remove the rings from my fat, slovenly husband's shirt collar when he is such a pig and sweats like one, too?
Wonderful. A column on cleaning and relationships. Two things I know absolutely nothing about.
Which one she wanna get rid of? Abilene asks. The rings or the husband?
I stare at the page. I wouldn't know how to instruct her to do either one.
Tell her a vinegar and pine saw soak. Then let it set in the sun a little while.
I write it quickly on my pad. Sit in the sun for how long?
About an hour. Let it dry.
I pull out the next letter and just as quickly she answers it. After 4 or 5, I exhale, relieved. Thank you, Abilene. You have no idea how much this helps.
Ain't no trouble. Long as Miss Leafolt don't need me.
I gather up my papers and I take a last sip of my Coke, letting myself relax for 5 seconds before I have to go write the article. Abilene picks through a sack of green fiddleheads. The room is quiet, except for the radio playing softly, Preacher Green again.
How did you know Constantine? Were you related?
We in the same church circle.
Abilene shifts her feet in front of the sink. I feel what has become a familiar sting. She didn't even leave an address. I can't believe she quit like that. Abilene keeps her eyes down. She seems to be studying the fiddleheads very carefully.
No, I'm right sure she was let go.
No, Mama said she quit. Back in April. Went to live up in Chicago with her people.
Abilene picks up another fiddlehead, starts washing its long stem, the curly green ends.
No, ma'am,
she says after a pause. It takes me a few seconds to realize what we're talking about here. Abilene, I say, trying to catch her eye, you really think
Constantine was fired?
But Abilene's face has gone blank as the blue sky.
I must be misremembering, she says.
And I can tell she thinks she's said too much to a white woman. We hear May Mobley calling out, and Abilene excuses herself and heads through the swinging door. A few seconds pass before I have the sense to go home. When I walk in the house 10 minutes later, Mother is reading at the dining room table.
Mother, I say, clutching my notebook to my chest, did you fire Constantine?
Did I what? Mother asks. But I know she's heard me, because she set the DAR newsletter down. It takes a hard question to pull her eyes off that riveting material.
Eugenia, I told you, her sister was sick, so she went up to Chicago to live with her people, she says. Why? Who told you different?
I would never in a million years tell her it was Abilene.
I heard it this afternoon in town. Who would talk about such a thing?
Mother narrows her eyes behind her reading glasses.
It must have been one of the other Negroes.
What did you do to her, Mother? Mother licks her lips, gives me a good long look over her bifocals.
You wouldn't understand, Eugenia. Not until you've hired help of your own.
You fired her? For what?
It doesn't matter. It's behind me now, and I just won't think about it another minute.
Mother, she raised me. You tell me right now what happened. I'm disgusted by the squeakiness of my voice, the childish sound of my demands. Mother raises her eyebrows at my tone, takes her glasses off.
It was nothing but a colored thing, and that's all I'm saying.
She puts her glasses back on and lifts her DAR sheet to her eyes. I'm shaking. I'm so mad. I pound my way up the stairs. I sit at my typewriter, stunned that my mother could cast off someone who'd done her the biggest favor of her life. Raise her children. Teach me kindness and self-respect. I stare across my room at the rose wallpaper, the eyelet curtains, the yellowing photographs so familiar they're nearly contemptible. Constantine worked for our family for 29 years. For the next week, Daddy rises before dawn. I wake to truck motors, the chug of the combine starting, the hollers to hurry. The fields are brown and crisp, with dead cotton stalks, defoliated so the machines can get to the bowls. Cotton harvest is here. Daddy doesn't even stop for church during harvest time. But on Sunday night, I catch him in the dusky hall, between his supper and sleep.
Daddy, I ask, will you tell me what happened to Constantine?
He's so dog-tired, he sighs before he answers.
How could Mother fire her, Daddy?
What? Darling, Constantine quit. You know your mother would never fire her.
He looks disappointed in me for asking such a thing.
Do you know where she went or have her address?
He shakes his head no.
Ask your mama, she'll know.
He pats my shoulder.
People move on, Skeeter. But I wish she'd stayed down here with us.
He wanders down the hall to bed. He's too honest a man to hide things, so I know he doesn't have any more facts about it than I do. That week, and every week, sometimes twice, I stop by Elizabeth's to talk to Abilene. Each time, Elizabeth looks a little warier. The longer I stay in the kitchen, the more chores Elizabeth comes up with until I leave. The doorknobs need polishing. The top of the refrigerator needs dusting. May Mobley's fingernails could use a trim. Abilene is no more than cordial with me. Nervous. Stands at the kitchen sink and never stops working. It's not long before I am ahead of copy, and Mr. Golden seems pleased with the column, the first two of which only took me about 20 minutes to write. And every week, I ask Abilene about Constantine. Can't she get her address for me? Can't she tell me anything about why she got fired? Was there a big to-do? Because I just can't imagine Constantine saying, "Yes, ma'am," and walking out the back door. Mama'd get cross with her about a tarnished spoon, and Constantine would serve her toast burned up for a week. I can only imagine how a firing would have gone. It hardly matters, though, because all Abilene will do is shrug at me, say she don't know nothing. One afternoon, after asking Abilene how to get out tough tub rings, never having scrubbed a bathtub in my life, I come home. I walk past the relaxing room. The television set is on, and I glance at it. Pascagoula's standing about 5 inches away from the screen. I hear the words, "Ole Miss," and on the fuzzy screen I see white men in dark suits crowding the camera, sweat running off their bald heads. I come closer and see a Negro man, about my age, standing in the middle of the white men, with army men behind him. The picture pans back, and there's my old administration building. Governor Ross Barnett stands with his arms crossed, looking the tall Negro in the eye. Next to the governor is our Senator Whitworth, whose son Hilly's been trying to set me up with on a blind date. I watch the television, riveted. Yet I am neither thrilled nor disappointed by the news that they might let a colored man into Ole Miss. Just surprised. Pascagoula, though, is breathing so loud I can hear her. She stands stock still, not aware I'm behind her. Roger Sticker, our local reporter, is nervous, smiling, talking fast.
"President Kennedy has ordered the governor to step aside for James Meredith. I repeat, the president of the United..." "Eugene! Pascagoula, turn that set off right this minute!"
Pascagoula jerks around to see me and Mother. She rushes out of the room, her eyes to the floor.
"Now, I won't have it, Eugenia," Mother whispers. "I won't have you encouraging them like that."
"Encouraging? It's nationwide news, Mama." Mother sniffs.
"It is not appropriate for the two of you to watch together."
And she flips the channel. Stops on an afternoon rerun of Lawrence Welk.
"Look, isn't this so much nicer?"
On a hot Saturday in late September, the cotton fields chopped and empty, Daddy carries a new RCA color television set into the house. He moves the black and white one to the kitchen. Smiling and proud, he plugs the new TV into the wall of the relaxing room. The Ole Miss versus LSU football game blares through the house for the rest of the afternoon. Mama, of course, is glued to the color picture, ooing and awing at the vibrant reds and blues of the team. She and Daddy live by Rebel football. She's dressed up in red wool pants despite the sweltering heat, and has Daddy's old Kappa Alpha blanket draped on the chair. No one mentions James Meredith, the colored student they let in. I take the Cadillac and head into town. Mother finds it inexplicable that I don't want to watch my alma mater throw a ball around. But Elizabeth and her family are at Hilly's watching the game, so Abilene's working in the house alone. I'm hoping it'll be a little easier on Abilene if Elizabeth's not there. Truth is, I'm hoping she'll tell me something, anything, about Constantine. Abilene lets me in and I follow her back to the kitchen. She seems only the smallest bit more relaxed in Elizabeth's empty house. She eyes the kitchen table like she wants to sit today. But when I ask her, she answers, "No, I'm fine. You go ahead."
She takes a tomato from a pan in the sink and starts to peel it with a knife. So I lean against the counter and present the latest conundrum. How to keep the dogs from getting into your trash cans outside, because your lazy husband forgets to put it out on the right pickup day, since he drinks all that damn beer.
Just pour some pneumonia in that garbage. Dogs won't so much as wink at them cans.
I jot it down, amending it to ammonia, and pick out the next letter. When I look up, Abilene's kind of smiling at me.
I don't mean nothing disrespectful, Miss Skeeter, but ain't it kind of strange you being the new Miss Myrna when you don't know nothing about housekeeping?
She didn't say it the way Mother did a month ago. I find myself laughing instead, and I tell her what I've told no one else about the phone calls and the resume I'd sent to Harper & Row, that I want to be a writer. The advice I received from Elaine Stein. It's nice to tell somebody. Abilene nods, turns her knife around another soft red tomato.
My boy Treloa, he liked to write.
I didn't know you had a son.
He dead 2 years now.
Oh, I'm so sorry,
I say,
and for a moment it's just Preacher Green in the room, the soft pat of tomato skins against the sink.
Made straight A's on every English test he take. Then later, when he grown, he pick himself up a typewriter and start working on an idea.
The pin-tucked shoulders of her uniform slump down.
Say he gonna write himself a book.
What kind of idea? I ask. I mean, if you don't mind telling. Abilene says nothing for a while. Keeps peeling tomatoes around and around.
He read this book called Invisible Man. When he done, he said he gonna write down what it was like to be colored working for a white man in Mississippi.
I look away, knowing this is where my mother would stop the conversation. This is where she'd smile and change the subject to the price of silver polish or white rice.
I read Invisible Man, too, after he did,
Abilene says.
I liked it all right.
I nod, even though I've never read it. I hadn't thought of Abilene as a reader before.
He wrote almost 50 pages,
she says.
I let his girl Frances keep hold of him.
Abilene stops peeling. I see her throat move when she swallows.
Please, don't tell nobody that,
she says softer now.
Him wanting to write about his white boss.
She bites her lip and it strikes me then that she's still afraid for him, even though he's dead. The instinct to be afraid for her son is still there. It's fine that you told me, Abilene. I think it was a brave idea. Abilene holds my gaze for a moment. Then she picks up another tomato and sets the knife against the skin. I watch, wait for the red juice to spill. But Abilene stops before she cuts, glances at the kitchen door.
I don't think it's fair, you not knowing what happened to Constantine. I'm sorry, I don't feel right talking to you about it.
I stay quiet, not sure what spurred this, not wanting to ruin it.
I tell you, though, it was something to do with her daughter coming to see your mama.
Daughter? Constantine never told me she had a daughter. I knew Constantine for 23 years. Why would she keep this from me?
It was hard for her. The baby come out real pale.
I hold still, remembering what Constantine told me years ago.
You mean light? Like
White?
Abilene nods, keeping at her task in the sink.
Had to send her away. Up north, I think.
Constantine's father was white, I say. Oh, Abilene, you don't think...
An ugly thought is running through my head. I am too shocked to finish my sentence.
Abilene shakes her head. No, no. No, ma'am. Not that. Constantine's man, Connor, he was color. But since Constantine had her daddy's blood in her, her baby come out a high yellow. It happens.
I feel ashamed for having thought the worst. Still, I don't understand.
Why didn't Constantine ever tell me?
I ask, not really expecting an answer.
Why would she send her away?
Abilene nods to herself like she understands, but I don't.
That was the worst off I ever seen her. Constantine must have said 1,000 times she couldn't wait for the day when she got her back.
You said the daughter, she had something to do with Constantine getting fired? What happened?
At this, Abilene's face goes blank. The curtain has drawn. She nods toward the Miss Myrna letters, making it clear that's all she's willing to say. At least, right now. That afternoon, I stop by Haley's football party. The street is lined with station wagons and long Buicks. I force myself through the door, knowing I'll be the only single one there. Inside, the living room is full of couples on the sofas, the chaises, the arms of chairs. Wives sit straight with their legs crossed, while husbands lean forward. All eyes are on the wooden television set. I stand in the back, exchange a few smiles, silent hellos. Except for the announcer, the room is quiet.
Woo-ah!
They all yell, and hands fly in the air, and women stand and clap and clap. I chew at my cuticle.
That's it, rebels! You show those tigers!
Go, rebels!
Cheers Mary Frances truly, jumping up and down in her matching sweater set. I look at my nail where my cuticle hangs off, stinging and pink. The room is thick with bourbon smell, and red wool, and diamond rings. I wonder if the girls really care about football, or if they just act this way to impress their husbands. In my 4 months of being in the league, I've never once had a girl ask me, "How about them ribs?" I chat my way through some couples until I make it to the kitchen. Hilly's tall, thin maid, Yule May, is folding dough around tiny sausages. Another colored girl, younger, washes dishes at the sink. Hilly waves me over, where she's talking to Dina Doran.
Best darn pettifor I've ever tasted. Dina, you might be the most talented cook in the league.
Hilly stuffs the rest of the cake in her mouth, nodding and mmming.
Why, thank you, Hilly. They're hard, but I think they're worth it.
Dina is beaming. Looks like she might cry under Hilly's adoration.
So you'll do it? Oh, I'm so glad. The bake sale committee really needs somebody like you.
And how many did you need?
500 by tomorrow afternoon.
Dina's smile freezes.
Okay, I guess I can work through the night.
Skeeter, you made it,
Hilly says, and Dina wanders out of the kitchen.
I can't stay long,
I say, probably too quickly.
Well, I found out,
Hilly smirks.
He is definitely coming this time, 3 weeks from today.
I watch Yule May's long fingers pinch the dough off a knife, and I sigh, knowing right away who she means. I don't know, Hilly. You've tried so many times. Maybe it's a sign. Last month, when he'd canceled the day before the date, I'd actually allowed myself a bit of excitement.
I don't really feel like going through that again.
What? Don't you dare say that!
Hilly, I clench my teeth, because it's time I finally just said it. You know I won't be his type.
Look at me,
she says, and I do as I'm told, because that is what we do around Hilly.
Hilly, you can't make me go. It is your time, Skeeter.
She reaches over and squeezes my hand, presses her thumb and fingers down as hard as Constantine ever did.
It is your turn, and damn it, I'm not going to let you miss this just because your mother convinced you you're not good enough for somebody like him.
I'm stung by her bitter, true words. And yet, I am awed by my friend, by her tenacity for me. Hilly and I have always been uncompromisingly honest with each other, even about the little things. With other people, Hilly hands out lies like the Presbyterians hand out guilt. But it's our own silent agreement, this strict honesty, perhaps the one thing that has kept us friends. Elizabeth comes in the kitchen carrying an empty plate. She smiles, then stops, and we all three look at each other.
What?
Elizabeth says. I can tell she thinks we've been talking about her.
3 weeks, then?
Hilly asks me.
You coming? Oh, yes, you are. You most certainly are going,
Elizabeth says. I look in their smiling faces, at their hope for me. It's not like Mother's meddling, but a clean hope, without strings or hurt. I hate that my friends have discussed this, my one night's fate, behind my back. I hate it, and I love it, too. I head back to the country before the game is over. Out the open window of the Cadillac, the fields look chopped and burned. Daddy finished the last harvest weeks ago, but the side of the road is still snowy with cotton stuck in the grass. Whiffs of it blow and float through the air. I check the mailbox from the driver's seat. Inside is the farmer's almanac and a single letter.
It is from Harper and Row. I turn into the drive, throw the gear into park.
The letter is handwritten on small, square notepaper. Miss Phelan, you certainly may hone your writing skills on such flat, passionless subjects as drunk driving and illiteracy. I'd hoped, however, you'd choose topics that actually had some punch to them. Keep looking. If you find something original, only then may you write me again. I slip past Mother in the dining room, invisible Pascagoula dusting pictures in the hall, up my steep, vicious stairs. My face burns. I fight the tears over Mrs. Stein's letter, tell myself to pull it together. The worst part is, I don't have any better ideas. I bury myself in the next housekeeping article, then the league newsletter. For the second week in a row, I leave out Hilly's bathroom initiative. An hour later, I find myself staring off at the window. My copy of Let Us Now Praise Famous Men sits on the window ledge. I walk over and pick it up, afraid the light will fade the paper jacket, the black and white photo of the humble, impoverished family on the cover. The book is warm and heavy from the sun. I wonder if I'll ever write anything worth anything at all. I turn when I hear Pascagoula's knock on my door. That's when the idea comes to me. No, I couldn't. That would be crossing the line. But the idea won't go away.
Abilene, Chapter 7. The heat wave finally passes around the middle of October, and we get ourselves a cool 50 degrees. In the mornings, that bathroom seat get cold out there. Give me a little start when I sit down. It's just a little room they built inside the carport. Inside is a toilet and a little sink attached to the wall. A pull cord for the light bulb. Paper have to sit on the floor. When I waited on Miss Collier, her carport attached to the house, so I didn't have to go outside. Place before that had a maid quarters, plus my own little bedroom for when I sit at night. This one I got to cross through the weather to get there. On a Tuesday noon, I carry my lunch on out to the back steps, set down on the cool concrete. Miss Leafo's grass don't grow good back here. A big magnolia tree shades most of the yard. I already know that tree's gonna be Mae Mobley's hideout in about 5 years to hide from Miss Leafolt. After a while, Mae Mobley waddled out on the back step. She got half her hamburger patty in her hand. She smiled up at me and say, "Good." "How come you not in there with your mama?" I ask. "But I know why. She'd rather be sitting out here with the help than in there watching her mama look anywhere but at her. She like one of them baby chickens that get confused and follow the ducks around instead." Mae Mobley pointed at the bluebirds getting ready for winter, twittering in the little gray fountain.
"Bluebirds!"
She point and drop her hamburger down on the step. Out of nowhere, that old bird dog Alvy they don't never pay no mind to come up and gobble it down. I don't take the dogs, but this one is just plain pitiful. I pet him on the head. I bet nobody petted that dog since Christmas. When Mae Mobley see him, she squeal and grab at his tail. It whap her in the face a few times before she get hold. Poor thing, he whine and give her one of those pitiful people dog looks. His head turned funny, his eyebrows up. I can almost hear him asking her to turn him loose. He ain't the biting kind. So she'll let go, I say, "Mae Mobley, where your tail?" Sure enough, she let go and start looking at her rear. Her mouth popped open like she just can't believe she done missed it all this time. She turning in wobbly circles trying to see it. "You ain't got no tail," I laugh, and catch her before she fall off that step. Dog sniff around for more hamburger. It always tickles me how these babies believe anything you tell them. Tate Forrest, one of my used-to-be babies long time ago, stopped me on the way to the jitney just last week, give me a big hug, so happy to see me. He a grown man now. I needed to get back to Miss Leafolt's, but he started laughing and remembering how I'd do him when he was a boy. How the first time his foot fell asleep and he say it tickle, I told him that was just his foot snoring. And how I told him don't drink coffee or he gonna turn colored. He say he still ain't drunk a cup of coffee and he 21 years old. It's always nice seeing the kids grow up fine.
"Mae Mobley! Mae Mobley, Leafolt!"
Miss Leafolt just now noticing her child ain't sitting in the same room with her. "She out here with me, Miss Leafolt," I say through the screen door.
"I told you to eat in your high chair, Mae Mobley. How I ended up with you when all my friends have angels, I just do not know."
But then the phone rang and I hear her stomping off to get it. I look down at baby girl, see how her forehead's all wrinkled up between the eyes. She's studying hard on something. I touch her cheek. "You all right, baby?" She say, "Mamo bad." The way she say it, like it's a fact, make my insides hurt. "Mae Mobley," I say, "'cause I got a notion to try something. You a smart girl." She just look at me like she don't know. "You a smart girl," I say again. She say, "Mae Mo's smart." I say, "You a kind little girl?" She just look at me. She 2 years old. She don't know what she is yet. I say, "You a kind girl." And she nod, repeat it back to me. But before I can do another one, she get up and chase that poor dog around the yard and laugh. And that's when I get to wondering, What would happen if I told her she's something good every day? She turned from the bird bath and smiled and holler,
Hi, Abby. I love you, Abby.
And I feel a tickly feeling, soft like the flap of butterfly wings, watching her play out there, the way I used to feel watching Tree Lore. And that makes me kind of sad, remembering. After a while, May Mobley come over and press her cheek up to mine and just hold it there, like she know I'd be hurting. I hold her tight and whisper, You a smart girl. You a kind girl, May Mobley. You hear me? And I keep saying it till she repeat it back to me. The next few weeks is real important for May Mobley. You think on it, you probably don't remember the first time you went to the bathroom in the toilet bowl instead of a diaper. Probably don't give no credit to who taught you, neither. Never had a single baby I raised come up to me and say, Abilene, why I sure do thank you for showing me how to go in the pot. It's a tricky thing. You try to get a baby to go in the toilet before it's time, it'll make them crazy. They can't get the hang of it and get to thinking low of themselves. Baby girl, though, I know she ready, and she knows she ready. But law, if she ain't running my fool legs off. I set her on her wooden baby seat so her little hiney don't fall in, and soon as I turn my back, she off that pot running. You got to go, May Mobley?
No.
You drunk up 2 glasses of grape juice, I know you got to go.
No.
I give you a cookie if you go for me. We look at each other a while. She start eyeing the door. I don't hear nothing happening in the bowl. Usually I can get them going after about 2 weeks, but that's if they got their mamas helping me. Little boys got to see their daddy doing it standing up style. Little girls got to see their mama sitting down. Miss Lee Folt won't let that girl come near her when she going, and that's the trouble. Go just a little for me, baby girl. She stick her lip out, shake her head. Miss Lee Folt gone to get her hair done. Else I ask her again, will she set the example, even though that woman's already said no 5 times. Last time Miss Lee Folt say no, I was fixing to tell her how many kids I raised in my lifetime and ask her what number she on. But I ended up saying all right, like I always do.
I give you 2 cookies. I say, even though her mama always getting on about me making her fat.
May Mobley shake her head and say,
You go.
Now, I ain't saying I ain't heard this before, but usually I can get around it. I know, though, she got to see how it's done before she gonna get to business. I say, I don't got to go. We look at each other. She point again and say,
You go.
Then she get to crying and fidgeting because that seat making a little indent on her behind. And I know what I'm going to have to do. I just don't know how to go about it. Should I take her out to the garage to mine or go here in this bathroom? What if Miss Leafo come home and I'm sitting up on this toilet? She have a fit. I put her diaper back on and we go out to the garage. Rain make it smell a little swampy. Even with the light on, it's dark. And there ain't no fancy wallpaper like inside the house. Fact, they really ain't no proper walls at all. Just plyboard hammered together. I wonder if she gonna be scared. All right, baby girl, here 'tis. Abilene's bathroom. She stick her head in and her mouth make the shape of a Cheerio. She say,
Oh.
I take down my underthings and I TT real fast, use the paper, and get it all back on before she can really see anything. Then I flush. And that's how you go in the toilet, I say. Well, don't she look surprised? Got her mouth hanging open like she done seen a miracle. I step out and before I know it, she got her diaper off and that little monkey done climbed on that toilet, holding herself up so she don't fall in. Going TT for herself.
May Mobley, you going? That's real good.
She smile and I catches it before she dip down in it. We run back inside and she get her two cookies. Later on, I get her on her pot and she go for me again. That's the hardest part, those first couple of times. By the end of the day, I feel like I really done something. She getting to be a pretty good talker, and you can guess what the new word of the day is. What baby girl do today? She say, TT. What they gonna put in the history books next to this day? She say, TT. I say, what Miss Hilly smell like? She say, TT. But I get on to myself. It wasn't Christian. Plus, I'm afraid she repeated. Late that afternoon, Miss Lefo come home with her hair all teased up. She got a permanent and she smelled like pneumonia. Guess what Mae Mobley done today? I say. Went to the bathroom in the toilet bowl. Oh, that's wonderful. She give her girl a hug, something I don't see enough of. I know she mean it, too, 'cause Miss Lefo do not like changing diapers. I say, you got to make sure she go in the pot from now on. It's real confusing for her if you don't. Miss Lefo smile, say, all right. Let's see if she do it one more time before I go home. We go in the bathroom. I get her diapers off and put her up on that toilet. But baby girl, she's shaking her head. Come on, Mae Mobley. Can't you go in the pot for your mama? No! Finally, I put her back down on her feet. That's all right. You did real good today. But Miss Lefo, she got her lips sticking out and she humping and frowning down at her. Before I can get her diaper on again, baby girl run off fast as she can. Naked little white baby running through the house. She in the kitchen. She got the back door open. She in the garage, trying to reach the knob to my bathroom. We run after her, and Miss Lefo pointing her finger. Her voice go about 10 pitches too high. This is not your bathroom! Baby girl wagging her head. My bathroom! Miss Lefo snatch her up, give her a pop on the leg. Miss Lefo, she don't know what she do. Get back in the house, Aveline! I hate it. But I go in the kitchen. I stand in the middle, leave the door open behind me. I did not raise you to use the colored bathroom. I hear her hiss whispering, thinking I can't hear. And I think, lady, you didn't raise your child at all. This is dirty out here, Mae Mobley. You'll catch diseases. No, no, no. And I hear her pop her again and again on her bare legs. After a second, Miss Lefo potato sack her inside. There ain't nothing I can do but watch it happen. My heart feel like it's squeezing up into my throat pipe. Miss Lefo dropped Mae Mobley in front of the TV, and she marched to her bedroom and slammed the door. I go give baby girl a hug. She's still crying, and she look awful confused. I'm real sorry, Mae Mobley. I whisper to her. I'm cussing myself for taking her out there in the first place. But I don't know what else to say. So I just hold her. We sit there watching Little Rascals until Miss Lefo come out asking, ain't it past time for me to go? I tuck my bus dime in my pocket, give Mae Mobley one more hug, whisper, you a smart girl. You a good girl. On the ride home, I don't see the big white houses passing outside the window. I don't talk to my maid friends. I see baby girl getting spanked 'cause of me. I see her listening to Miss Lefo call me dirty, diseased. The bus speeds up along State Street. We pass over the Woodrow Wilson Bridge, and my jaw's so tight I could break my teeth off. I feel that bitter seed growing inside of me. The one planted after Tree Lord died. I want to yell so loud that baby girl can hear me that dirty ain't a color. Disease ain't the Negro side of town. I want to stop that moment from coming. And it come in every white child's life. when they start to think that colored folks ain't as good as whites. We turn on Farish and I stand up 'cause my stop be coming. I pray that wasn't her moment. Pray I still got time. Things is real quiet the next few weeks. Mae Mobley's wearing big girl panties now. She don't hardly ever have no accidents. After what happened in the garage, Miss Lefo take a real interest in Mae Mobley's bathroom habits. She even let her watch her on the pot, set the white example. A few times, though, when her mama's gone, I still catch her trying to go in mine. Sometimes she do it before I can tell her no. Hey, Miss Clark. Robert Brown, who do Miss Leafo's yard, come up on her back steps. It's nice and cool out. I open the screen door. How you doing, son? I say and pat him on the arm. I hear you working every yard on the street. Yes, ma'am. Got two guys mowing for me, he grinned. He a handsome boy, tall, with short hair. Went to high school with Treloar. They was good friends, played baseball together. I touch him on the arm, just needing to feel it again. How your grandmama? I ask. I love Lavinia. She is the sweetest person living. She and Robert came to the funeral together. This makes me remember what's coming next week. The worst day of the year. She's stronger than me, he smiled. I'll be by your house on Saturday to mow. Sheila always did my mowing for me. Now Robert does it without my even asking. Never will take any money for it. Thank you, Robert. I appreciate it. You need anything, you call me, all right, Miss Clark? Thank you, son. I hear the doorbell ring, and I see Miss Skeeter's car out front. Miss Skeeter been coming over to Miss Leafolt's every week this month to ask me the Miss Myrna questions. She asks about hard water stains, and I tell her cream of tartar. She asks how you unscrew a light bulb that done broke off in the socket, and I tell her a raw potato. She asks me what happened with her old maid Constantine and her mama, and I go cold. I thought if I told her a little a few weeks ago about Constantine having a daughter, she'd leave me alone about it after that. But Miss Skeeter just keep on asking me questions. I could tell she don't understand why a colored woman can't raise no white-skinned baby in Mississippi. Be a hard, lonely life not belonging here nor there. Every time Miss Skeeter finished asking me how to clean the this or fix the that or wear Constantine, we get to talking about other things, too. That's not something I've done a whole lot with my bosses or their friends. I find myself telling her how Treloar never made below a B+. Or that the new church deacon get on my nerves 'cause he lisp. Little bits, but things I ordinarily wouldn't tell a white person. Today I'm trying to explain to her the difference between dipping and polishing the silver, how only the tacky houses do the dip 'cause it's faster, but it don't look good. Miss Skeeter cock her head to the side, wrinkle her forehead. Abilene, remember that idea Treloar had. I nod, feel a prickle. I should have never shared that with a white woman. Miss Skeeter squint her eyes like she did when she brung up the bathroom thing that time. I've been thinking about it. I've been wanting to talk to you. Before she can finish, Miss Lefo come in the kitchen and catch baby girl playing with my comb in my pocketbook and say, maybe Mae Mobley ought to have her bath early today. I tell Miss Skeeter goodbye. Go start the tub. After I spent a year dreading it, November 8th finally come. I spec I sleep about 2 hours the night before. I wake up at dawn and put a pot of community coffee on the stovetop. My back hurts when I bend over to get my hose on. Before I walk out the door, the phone rang. Just checking on you. You sleep? I did all right. I'm gonna bring you a caramel cake tonight, and I don't want you to do nothing but sit in your kitchen and eat the whole thing for supper. I try to smile, but nothing come out. I tell Minnie thank you. 3 years ago today, Tree Lord died. But by Miss Leafolt's book, it's still floor cleaning day. Thanksgiving coming in 2 weeks, and I got plenty to do to get ready. I scrub my way through the morning.